Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele, and it's a pleasure to have you back in the neighborhood. Thanks for dropping in. It's always a pleasure when you do. I love it when you do that download thing, as you know. Catch us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your downloads, and certainly give us a 5-star review. Share us on social media. Check me out on Twitter, at Michael Steele. So I wanted to have a sort of a laser focus in this conversation about women in politics. And I was thinking back when I was talking to a producer about this, about a young woman that I knew back in the day who was stirring up the pot in a little place called Virginia. She would go on to get herself elected to Congress in 2014, serving 2 terms, representing Virginia's 10th congressional district. She was named as one of the top 10 most effective lawmakers in the 115th Congress by the Center for Effective Lawmaking. She now serves as a senior advisor with Baker Donaldson, where she offers clients decades of her policy experience in the legislative, administrative, and private sector areas. She is none other than Congresswoman Barbara Comstock from the great state of Virginia, whom I've known a long, long time, going back, gosh, probably when I was a county chairman, certainly when I was a state chairman here in Maryland. And what's exciting about Barbara is that she does the politics, but she has an anchor into what people are going through, how they live their lives, what their experiences are. And as an example of that, her legislative achievements include passing legislation to promote women and disadvantaged populations in STEM, as well as expanding research in the technology space. So when people talk about what women do, Barbara, you're a good model of that, how elective leadership can make a difference in a number of areas. And so I wanted to get you on to talk about that. And of course, some of the crazy stuff that's going on inside Republican politics right now. But welcome to the podcast. It's such a pleasure.
Welcome. Great to be with you.
Absolutely.
And I think you're talking about it. I think we did meet on one of your first races in Maryland. And then I remember, I guess, when you ran for Senate, right?
Yeah.
Held a fundraiser for you. So yes, that was before I went into that. And then, of course, you were chairman when I first ran in the Virginia State House.
Yep.
So 2009 was a great year that then portended, you know, to the takeover of Congress
I remember that campaign well. Spent a lot of time in Virginia that my first year as RNC chairman.
That's right. A very good cycle. Very different time.
very different time. So I want to, you know, I think a lot of the conversations that we hear, particularly in the political space about women is from the Democratic side, the progressive left, especially in many instances, even to the exclusion sometimes for Democrats of strong candidates and now elected officials like Mikey Sherrill of New Jersey. We've seen in this cycle a diverse selection of GOP women leaders, and we've seen gadflies, crazy. Marjorie Taylor Greene comes to mind. Certainly, I think the preeminent female Republican leader right now is Liz Cheney. When you step back and you then look more broadly at what the landscape looks like, Republicans have so far 127 GOP women who've announced their plans to run for a U.S. House seat, more than twice the 50 women who had declared their candidacy at this point in the 2020 cycle. What do you think attributes to that? And what does this crop, because I know you're working with a number of these women, what does it look like? Sound like, feel like.
No, I mean, it means, you know, when you have those numbers, sometimes a lot of them are in the same seat. Say if it's an open seat, a lot of them, you know, might be, you know, not in districts that are really very competitive. So
right. You
really can, you know, get down to where are the women in the 45 or so seats that are going to be, you know, the key seats or things like in Virginia, we do have a state senator, Jen Kiggins, who is running in the Virginia Beach seat against Elaine Loria. And usually what we try and find in the most effective candidates is that they already are in a state or local, you know, position, because then they're candidates who know how to run a race. They already have a footprint. Particularly when they're challenging incumbents, that's the most effective thing to do. Not that you can't, you know, I mean, my first race, you know, in the state house, I was challenging an incumbent and I wasn't in office, but I was running in a local office. But I know that local office experience, even though I'd had all kinds of experience on the national level and campaigns and working with a lot of folks, the fact that I had been a state legislator was probably, you know, one of the most effective, you know, helpful things in terms of then, you know, moving on to run for Congress, even though
right.
I worked for the congressman I was, you know, went on to replace. And even though I had, you know, worked on Senate campaigns and the like. So we do try and encourage women first, you know, get that farm team to run on the state and local level. Oftentimes people don't want to do that.
Right.
You know, the salary isn't great.
right.
You know, they have bigger plans, but certainly one of the things the Democrats have done successfully, and we try and replicate this for Republicans, is find those state and local leaders who already have that footprint. Like, for example, in Iowa, Ashley Hinson, who's a new freshman representative, was a state senator already. Nicole Malliotakis in Staten Island also was, I can't remember, a state senator or state rep. And so that made them more effective candidates, particularly since they were challenging incumbents. So that's kind of what we look for, you know, at VUPAC or Winning for Women, both of the groups I'm on their board, when we're trying to find women. But, you know, over the past, you know, several cycles, obviously Trump has made that whole dynamic difficult. Certainly, you know, for the class of 18, the women got wiped out, which is really what inspired a lot of them to come back. You know, women to run again. People like Young Kim actually was on the ballot in 18, and then she ran again in 20. You know, she's really a model candidate because she's in a tough district that Biden won, but she had been a state senator, I believe it was, been active locally. And so when she ran again, you know, she learned, you know, different to do in that congressional race. And she really kind of set herself apart and didn't, you know, attach herself to Donald Trump, who clearly was going to lose her seat. So I think she's probably a model of where we can grow women who don't feel the need to attach themselves to Donald Trump. I mean, unfortunately, in these really red seats, like you mentioned, like with, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, people like that, we can end up with a really, you know, bad women, and we certainly don't support women just because they're women.
Right.
So in the case of Marjorie Greene and Lauren Boebert, we did not support them, nor will we be supporting them for re-election.
What type of organization and networking is in place, is being put in place to elevate you know, the women, especially, who are best representative of, you know, the Republican narrative and sort of philosophy, as opposed to what we've seen happen with Trumpism, and to really kind of build that bench, as you said, which has always been a big deal for me as a former party official. Is if you don't have a bench, then you're not ready to play, because the moment, you know, one of your players go down, how do you replace them? You know, where do you go? You've always got to think about building that. So it's refreshing on the one hand to see so many women looking to run, but it is potentially concerning on the other if they are running to represent Donald Trump and Trumpism, as opposed to those values that you and I, both as candidate and as elected officials, have always espoused, you know, in articulating the values and the principles that distinguish us from our Democratic friends. And that's part of the healthy part of the debate, you know, right, around some of these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, you and I both, you know, obviously are not Donald Trump fans, but I'm still a fan of tax cuts and
you amen.
Know, having less regulation in business, really supporting innovation, which is being attacked from the right and the left. So, you know, it's oftentimes, you know, since we're agreeing with Democrats on things about Donald Trump, and they turn and say, yeah, but you agreed with Donald Trump on this. I said, no, Donald Trump signed my STEM bills. Donald Trump signed my bills to go after gangs. I wrote the bills. He signed them. He didn't propose any bills
that
I introduced for him. He happened to sign mine. And, you know, that's in politics, whether you like the guy who's going to sign the bills or not, the whole idea is to get things done. But I think when you look at the kind of leaders that we're looking for, you know, I think, you know, history certainly is going to reward a Liz Cheney, Jamie Herrera Butler, you know, mm-hmm. both of whom voted for impeachment. When you talk about, you know, effective legislators who really can do good things both for the country and for their districts, you know, nobody knows Wyoming the way Liz does. And whether it's mining issues or land issues, water, you know, all the local Wyoming issues, she knows so well, you know, from a lifetime of service with her family. And so when you see some of these state senators or these joker guys who are trying to run against her, they don't know, you know, they represent right. some tiny bit of Wyoming, and they're not going to know or have the breadth and the ability to be able to get bills through and deliver for the state the way Liz is. And I think ultimately that's, you know, that should be what people vote on, not just loyalty to one person. And I think you saw that in Texas, in the Texas special recently.
Yes.
No, actually, full disclosure, I mean, VUPAC that I'm on the board of, they did support Susan Wright early. Frankly, I was disappointed when Trump came in to endorse her, because I felt like, hey, you're better off without that, which turns out she would have been. And, you know, now they're trying to blame it on her. But the person who did beat her was a state senator who he didn't get fazed by the fact that Trump hadn't supported him. He went and heralded what he had done for the district and his know-how. And he also put together a political operation that obviously was superior to Susan Wright's. So I think when you look at that, you realize, you know, you can beat a Trump endorsed person. Now, in the Ohio race this week, the VUPAC woman did not win, but you had, what, 11 candidates.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean,
with 11 candidates, a Trump endorsement can help, because you did have state and local officials there. But, you know, there is a third, you know, of the party that's always going to, you know, if he does, puts his finger on the scale, might help. But I think when you look at, I know I'm talking about men instead of women here, but, you know, Max Miller going against Anthony Gonzalez. Anthony Gonzalez is a very good legislator. He's already passed bills, gets things done, is a real grinder on working for his district. That's my puppy.
Oh, that's all good. He can participate.
Whereas Max Miller is a lightweight who, you know, already, you know, as you read about him, realize the Trump people didn't vet him very well. It was just vengeance instead of vetting.
Right.
And if you don't vet candidates, you're going to end up with disasters like that. So, you know, I do think people, I think at the end of the day, even Republicans and even some Trump voters want to see somebody who stands up for themselves, stands up for their district, and doesn't get into this cult worship stuff of one guy. I just don't think in the long run that's what, you know, district can make a difference. But I think the people who are selling their souls to Trump right now are going to be short-termers. And, you know, you see people, you know, you think certainly with women, I'm even forgetting the names of some of the people who ran, the woman who ran for president, I'm blanking on her name now, you know, she's, you know, flamed out pretty quickly. She was like in a Trump mode. And then, you know, Sarah Palin, you know, we haven't heard from her since she endorsed Donald Trump, right?
Well,
I do think, it's these people who are thinking allegiance to Trump is going to get them anyway. I think this is going to be short term. Not that it can't hurt us short term, but in the long run, people want people who are their own men and their own women. And that's why, like a Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, who are so subservient to Donald Trump, it makes you look like a weak person to not be.
And you are. I mean, if you can't, I mean, particularly after, you know, he calls your daddy a presidential assassin and your wife ugly, and you're still sycophantically, you know, kowtowing to him. Yeah, you are weak.
What happened to George P. Bush. I call them the George P. Republicans. And the George P. Republicans, what did that get you? You sold your soul. And I think as somebody wrote, I'm paraphrasing somebody, that, you know, you found out it wasn't worth much.
Well, so you referenced VPAC, which is the Value in Electing Women PAC. It was founded, I believe, in the late 1990s, 96, 97 in there. Right. Yeah. And it was organized to increase the number of Republican women in Congress. The PAC just recently came out condemning the actions of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert of Colorado, Greene of Georgia, referring to them as carnival barkers. I happen to applaud that appellation. I think it's appropriate. How do you see organizations like VPAC in not just in the process of identifying a Barbara Comstock kind of candidate, right? To run and win in districts across the country, but then also to engage some of the crazy that's in place right now to draw clear, identifiable lines between common sense Republicanism and this batshit crazy Trumpism.
Well, it's not easy. And I'll tell you, Julie Conway, who runs VPAC and has been there for years, is just legendary. And she really works with the candidates right from the beginning, then puts, you know, other people like me or people on our board or other women candidates kind of in touch with them, kind of, you know, to be mentors and guide them when they get elected. And oftentimes she's supporting people in the primary. So we often try to identify, particularly if there's a crowded primary where you might have a, you know, it might be your path to winning, you know.
Right.
We're trying to find those who, you know, like I said, like state and local person. And then when they win, Julie's there helping them get staff and helping their reelection efforts and really setting up in Washington. She finds them apartments and places to live sometimes. So she's really a full service operation. And then Winning for Women, that I'm also on the board there, Annie Dickerson, who started this, both of these groups have been wonderful from when I first ran. They were there, you know, the people and the individuals with me, even back to the state house here, talk about getting that farm team. And they are really good at then plugging these women into networks of other women, helping them with policy and issues and, you know, I'm making sure they, you know, when they do come in, that they are really solid legislators. So you see, you know, and I think that's where someone like a Jamie Herrera Butler, who VPAC has always supported in Winning for Women, you know, she's one of the foremost leaders on issues for women, for children with disabilities, for high-risk pregnancies, which she had, and she's just a great authority on this, and she gets bipartisan legislation through. You know, she's been really working collaboratively on issues that really aren't red or blue, but they're just important for constituents. And I think those, again, she being primary because she voted for impeachment, but I think you're going to see the quality of her work and her knowledge of her district win out at the end.
Well, you're actually raising an interesting point, Barbara, because I'm curious your thinking, and certainly the network of women that you are working with right now, how you're viewing, and I'm going to speak of Marjorie Taylor Greene as representative of a group, a type of candidate that, you know, sort of the Trump faction, and then juxtaposed against the Liz Cheney model. How do you see that narrative play itself out? How does a Marjorie Taylor Greene continue to garner the following that she has, you know, spew bile and bull, raises millions upon millions of dollars from that bile and bull, runs around claiming that she, along with crazy ass Matt Gaetz, is the future of the Republican Party. Count me out of that rat hole.
No, they won't be.
And that's the point. They won't be. But how do you explain?
And she's never going to pass a bill. I think, you know, now there's an ideal situation where somebody who's already a state legislator in her district, you know, I mean, there's 800,000 people in a district, right? And there's got to be a state senator or a state rep in that area who's actually done things and can say, unlike Marjorie, I've passed five bills that do this, that, and the other that have helped you. I've actually gotten a tax cut passed, or I've actually, you know, done something for your roads or your bridges already. Marjorie's not even on a committee and never will be. So, I guess if Republicans win and she's still there, she probably would be, but she's an embarrassment to the state and to the district. And certainly in Georgia, there is a smarter, more effective person, pretty much anybody besides her would be. So, you know, I encourage any Republican in that district to run, because she's somebody who just wants to be a celebrity. I call them congressional Kardashians. They aren't serious people.
Right.
And they are never going to pass legislation. And really the money they're spending, because she gets the low dollar donations and just churns it and has all these operations and people who raise it for her. The people who are making a lot of money off of her are the direct mail people, online things. So the churn on her money is like, she's paying more to fundraise than your average member, she's doing, she's flying all over the country, yet some of these things people are canceling, that people aren't showing up. I mean, it's all about, it's getting money so we can just go out there. We're not doing anything for our district. So that's the other thing I'd run on and say, hey, you know, she's out, you know, like Matt Gaetz out and everywhere else flying around trying to be a celebrity. I don't care about being a celebrity. I'm just going to work on your roads and bridges. And there's got to be a lot of stuff that is not getting done in her district because she's absolutely worthless. And there's got to be somebody who's probably doing things and they could run on, wouldn't you rather have a substantive person who gets things done for you and let her just go on the clown show that she's on her own time.
So quick sidebar, since we brought up Matt Gaetz, there was a press release that went around from his office with the official seal of the United States Congress on it, touting Congressman Matt Gaetz launches new podcast Firebrand with Matt Gaetz. Can he do that? Is that legal to use congressional email and letterhead to advertise your own personal podcast? I don't think this is not a congressional podcast.
You know, I hadn't seen that. I don't, you know, I don't know what the rules are on that.
Just so folks know,
you know, you can do newsletters. I mean, if he's talking about legislation and things, I suppose he can.
SOB is not talking about no damn legislation. His first guest is Marjorie Taylor Greene.
So they'll be talking about Stop the Steal, which really and you have, you have Mo Brooks, who's trying to claim that his speech, you know, at the
protected. I was doing my job when I was inciting a riot.
Now, fortunately, he's giving us good information for the January 6th committee, because he says he talks to, in recent filing, he said he talked to Mark Meadows about it. So that's why it's official. And he, the White House asked him to speak at it. That's why it's official, which he's probably showing that the White House was doing political things that they shouldn't have been doing, perhaps.
These people are so stupid. They don't even realize every time they open their mouths, they're adding more and more evidence against them.
I should mention that a great candidate that we are supporting for Senate in Alabama is Katie Britt.
I've heard of Katie, yes.
Aforementioned Mo Brooks, who is talk about somebody else who's worthless in Congress, but dangerous, judging from, you know, his January 6th speech, where, you know, certainly sounded to me, in my opinion, you know, dangerous things to say to an angry mob of people
right.
who were there. But Katie Britt, who was a chief of staff for Senator Shelby, has been a CEO and president of the Alabama Chamber, I believe it is, or their business group down there in Alabama. Very effective, you know, senior staffer, senior policy person, has worked for all the business interests of Alabama. She got in the race. She is the top fundraiser so far. So now the president and Mo Brooks went against her. I can't remember exactly the misogynist smears they were. But they called her an assistant. Now, mind you, this is somebody who was, you know, communications director, chief of staff for a Senate, for a very important senator who, you know, is very senior in the Senate. And then she's CEO of, you know, a business group and, you know,
an assistant.
And so they call her an assistant. I think, you know, it's like, okay, where's Ivanka? Is she going to jump in here and misogynistic that is? But, and I can tell you, those things do not go over well, because when I had my Democrat opponent in 2014 attacked me, saying I'd never had a real job. At that time, you know, I mean, I had been a partner in a law firm. I had been a senior Justice Department official. I had worked for the man we were both trying to replace. And he's saying I didn't have a real job, which was kind of bizarrely, you know, smearing federal employees, which are a big part of our district, as well as me personally. And I can tell you, that was the thing that he just got wiped off the, you know,
amazing how that sensibility.
He beat it by 16 points, because when people heard that on an ad, interesting, you know, talk about being a female candidate and how you don't get a break, particularly as Republicans, the Washington Post male reporter would not report that story. Until we complained to the female editors, and they finally did a small little story. But when there were millions of dollars of ads put up with him saying that and making that point, people were like high-fiving me on the street saying, we're going to get you a real job.
Right.
And so these I tell you that story to say these sexist kind of attacks on Katie Britt, even though, you know, in a red place like Alabama, you know, there are some men who think that way, yeah. But Mo Brooks probably already has them. But somebody like Katie Britt, who is, you know, certainly conservative, hits all the right buttons on, you know, conservative Republican issues, but she would be someone who would hit the ground running as an effective legislator. And so for me, she's one of, you know, my top priorities. VPAC has already endorsed her. Of course, we've endorsed people like Lisa Murkowski, who's also being targeted.
Right.
And look what, you know, who's getting the infrastructure bill done? You know, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski.
Right. Yeah, they're driving. They're
target. You know, Josh Hawley, who gets nothing done. You know, you know, and of course, I'm sure they'll probably be voting against, I expect, against
the infrastructure. Yeah, but, you know, Josh Hawley offers a good fist pump, you know, to the wrong team. So that we at least we got that. Speaking of the misogyny and all of that, what's your take on Governor Cuomo's response to the AG report out of New York about his behavior? My view of it is, dude, save all of us the pain of watching you, you know, play Hamlet. just step down and call it a career because you are toast. But, you know, the governor will be the governor and do what he thinks is best for him. How do you think this is playing in Peoria, as they say?
Well, I think, you know, I think he's trying to pull a Trump, right? And just gut it out.
Right.
And think, you know, he'll have some. But his problem is this was investigated by a Democrat AG. All the women he was assaulting, alleged, you know, the 11 women were Democrats or his own staff with the officer. And then the entire Democrat delegation has called for him to step down. And then I guess a majority or more of the Democrats in the state house who will be, it looks like, quickly impeaching him. And they say they have the votes. So it's, you know, the report was very damning, obviously, but his coming on and saying, oh, this is all politics. Like, well, wait, it's all Democrats. It's not. These are people who went to work for you because they believed in you. Actually the hardest thing for people who like, hey, I don't want this to ruin my career. And we know that sexual harassment, when people come forward, it does hurt them. Most sexual harassment or assault victims end up leaving the profession they're in, whether it's journalism, which we've seen a lot of in that case too, or politics. They leave that and never go into it. And that's a loss of income, loss of opportunity. And it's very damaging. And for him to continue to sort of assail these women, I think he's now going to be subject to these lawsuits.
Well, and he's inviting the lawsuits by his declarations. I mean,
if he had just left when this first came out, he would have spared himself a lot of embarrassment. And because I think a lot of the women would have just been happy if he's gone. He's not hurting anybody else.
Right.
The stories are out there. So, you know, women beware. And, but then he also would have had his campaign account and he could take care of himself, you know, to the degree you can use that to spend on your legal bills and other things. Now he's going to wipe out, you know, I mean, he's going to have to spend millions if he stays in and fights this. And just like Trump at the end had the dregs for staff with him, he really has the dregs of staff, none of whom obviously can say, hey, boss, don't say that. So it's very discouraging to see this, you know, in all the language people are using about him. It's the same as Trump. Well, he's a fighter. He's not going to take this lying down. It's like, well, but the women that you assaulted, they're the issue. And you are not. And then from a party standpoint, you'd think, you know, even Elliot Spitzer, when he left, you know, and had his own scandal, which I think, you know, Cuomo was telling him to leave. He did a lot, you know, he did less, really. And he said, well, I'll step aside for the sake of New York. So where is that? You know, Richard Nixon did finally step aside for the sake of his party in the country. You know, he looks like a statesman these days.
Right.
Of course, Bill Clinton didn't. I mean, and I've caught, whether it's Bill Clinton or Donald Trump and everyone in between and the Harvey Weinsteins. I mean, I did sexual harassment legislation. Of the reasons I got the aforementioned most effective legislator, because we got everything in there that people hadn't been able to get in for years. And everyone, oh, you're never going to get that through. And we did. And the women, I worked with Jackie Speer and Debbie Dingell, and it was bipartisan women. We actually had a great guy from Bradley Byrne from Alabama who helped us too, who was a labor lawyer. So he knew he had worked on these cases. And any boss in this country, if a guy like this worked in your office, you would have been gone already. If you were on a board, the board would kick you off.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these things, and you've seen executives everywhere saying, if that went on in my company, no, we couldn't do that. But somehow these political characters, they think the rules don't apply to them. So I think it's really important. Now, I will say, having had the ridiculous situation we had in Virginia where everyone called for Northam to resign, but then when his lieutenant governor had alleged sexual allegations, which he denies, lodged against him, then nobody really wanted him to be the governor. And then the attorney general also had some problems.
Yeah, Virginia had a unique situation.
So then number four would have been a Republican. So then the Democrats all hunkered down and said, never mind.
Right.
In New York, you don't have that problem. Now, if the lieutenant governor were a Republican, probably hanging in there might work. unfortunately, but that's why I think it's so important these sexual harassment things not be partisan, because that Democrats call their own out, that Republicans do, and you don't look at it as political opportunity. People forget that back in the 90s, when Bob Packwood had all of the sexual allegations against him, he was a Republican senator that, from Oregon, a tough state for Republicans to win. And Mitch McConnell was on that ethics committee, did the right thing, said he had to go. And we lost that seat forever then.
Yeah.
And that was known when they did that, but they did the right thing. Same thing when we had the David Duke situation in Louisiana. He's a racist, whatever. I think the thing was support the crook. It's important because the Democrat was awful.
That's right. It was support the crook campaign. That's right.
Didn't want a racist. Said no. So I think both parties need to get back to where there are certain lines that you cannot cross. And unfortunately, Trump violated those. We've had, now Cuomo has, and you'll notice that people who are violating those are usually men. One of the reasons why we have, and I say to people, if you think about if a 60 something, not too attractive woman had done the things to a 20 something man, then guys can see it, right? They can say, I would be repulsed if, a 60-year-old woman kissed me involuntarily or was taking my face or putting his finger, putting her finger down my back. It's funny if, I said, hey, how would you like, think of the most repulsive woman you don't like doing that to you? Then they can understand, oh yeah, that would be harassment. That would be awful.
Yeah, then it's harassment.
Somehow women are supposed to put up with that and they shouldn't.
It's interesting.
And I appreciate those women who came forward because their careers still will be difficult now.
Yeah.
And I hope there will be Democrats who will hire them. But what happens is even when you come out and do things, then people are like, well, that was a whistleblower. You better watch out. Whistleblowers always end up having it's a sacrifice they make for others, and they should be praised for it, not
condemned,
victimized again the way he's doing it.
We're going to take a quick break.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Barbara Comstock, she's a firebrand, y'all. She's one of a kind. She's out there doing her thing. I love it. She has her Young Leaders Women's Leadership Program is a strong program. What's that? The Institute of Women in Leadership at George Mason University. Is that where that's?
Yes, I have a program on leadership at the George Mason University. It's because of COVID, we've had it. We haven't been able to do it as much, but we will be starting it back up. It's a summer program where we bring young women in high school, because we want young women in high school to really think about being leaders in a variety of professions. We want to expose them to business, politics, charities, medicine. And we take them, the whole idea is to take them into the workplace, whether it's, Capital One was wonderful and had us come over, and these high school young women got to visit and meet all the leading women they had there. Of course, we bring them to Congress. Donna Edwards pairs up with me and does it.
Nice.
With Congress. We're Congresswoman from Maryland. The Inova Hospital took us all through their new cancer wing, and we got to meet with women doctors who are doing this. And so it's just exciting to Sheila Johnson, the first African-American billionaire in the world, came and met with our young women. So it's my passion project to, and that's why I like, whether it's helping get women elected or having these next generation of women leaders start thinking of themselves as leaders at a young age. It's something that, and one of the things we do with the young girls is we do things on human trafficking, we do things on sexual harassment, and we try and introduce them to the whole world in that space so that they aren't victimized in their careers and hear from people and on those kind of issues too, so that they can step into the whole world of women and leadership in a more confident way.
Well, we appreciate the work you're doing, Barbara, very much. I know you're making a difference, certainly for a lot of young women out there, getting them exposed to their future now and having them play a role in shaping that future from the very beginning. And thank you for your service to the country as a member of Congress and what you're doing now to help women achieve elective office, be good leaders, be good servant leaders.
And you know, I had women chief of staff always, I think in pretty much all the years I was in office. And one of the things that you'll be happy to hear, you know, I've been out talking about the need for the January 6th commission and
right.
to, you know, deal with the big lie. I hear from women staffers on the Hill.
Yeah.
Interesting, some of them who've left because their member, they just can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
Not for sexual harassment, because
right,
of
just,
what their member has done.
Right.
And they just are like, thank you for voicing this. And by the way, I left so-and-so's office. I left so-and-so's office. And it's sad that women are losing those opportunities, but it's great to see principled women say, you know what, I'm not going to stay here and do this for this person when they're behaving in this way and the big lie and all. And so I think, you know, that's one of the reasons I go out there, is because I want people to know you're not alone. Even if you can't speak up,
right,
you're not in a position you can, you at least need to know that people think like you do. And, you know, it's, you're not, you know, we all have those people to check in with, like, I'm not crazy, right?
This really is
outrageous what's going on, whether it's
right.
in Arizona.
This really is Georgia. Happening.
And that's why I just think, you know, Liz Cheney is going to be in the books with Margaret Chase Smith. And I will remind people, because I did not know the Margaret Chase Smith story as much as I should, and I'm going to read more about her. You know, when she first went against Joe McCarthy in 1950,
yeah.
she only had six senators with
That's
her
right.
when she did her Declaration of Congress and called them out. 4 years later, 67 voted not expel him, but censure him.
Censure him, right.
And so from six to 67, it took 4 years. And I think the truth-telling on Donald Trump hopefully will be a shorter time, because I'd rather him not be our nominee for 2024 and have us go down in flames again. I would like to turn the page and have a post-Trump, post-pandemic, smart Republican Party.
There you go. That's the goal. That's the goal. Well, I appreciate you, Barbara, coming on the podcast and spending some time with us and giving some insight to a lot of the fresh faces in the party, women who are, you know, doing exactly as you said, creating that opportunity to reposition the party so that it can be a competitive governing party in the future. Barbara Comstock, former member of the 10th Congressional District of Virginia. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, folks.
That does it for this time together. You know, I love it. Like I said, when you do the download thing, please download us, share us on social media, and certainly follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. You can follow Barbara. Where are you on Twitter?
At Barbara Comstock.
At Barbara Comstock. There you go. So follow Barbara, catch up on the work she's doing. Out there working to help women engage in politics through VUPAC, Value in Electing Women. Until next time, be safe, be well, get the vaccine. Stop being stupid.
Please get the vaccine. I just talked to someone who said their aunt got COVID because she would not get the vaccine and died this past week.
It's
sad to read those stories. And Julia Letlow, who's a great new female member of Congress, she's in Congress because unfortunately her husband died of COVID before we had the vaccine. And she has a very, I put it on my Twitter, very moving story of how, you know, how she would encourage everyone to get the vaccine. And now she has two little kids and she's a widow and she is an advocate for the vaccines in very conservative territory. And God bless her. She's the kind of woman we need there.
Yeah, it's real, folks. It's real. Don't play around with it. And don't take stupid for an answer, right? Vaccinate yourself, wear the masks so that you get to see Thanksgiving, Christmas, and have a birthday next year.
Until your children grow up.
Until next time, be safe, folks. Take care.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.